To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Good evening, and welcome to Labor Radio of the Working Class, by the Working Class, for the Working Class. I'm your host, Jamie Partridge. Tonight, our guests are Nidia Caballero, an electrician, a union electrician, and Giovanni Tolentino of the Hillsborough Education Association, a teacher. Nidia, you have been active with the Portland Deportation Defense Coalition, the Labor Committee to Defend Immigrants, and Gio, you are the co-chair of Salem DSA and are involved with the Avelo divestment campaign. Welcome, Nidia and Gio.
Thank you for having me.
So we brought you two on the program to talk about President Trump's mass deportation campaign against immigrant workers, communities, families, their employers, and our unions, as well as what we can do to defend our immigrant siblings from deportation. Trump calls immigrants invaders, rapists, criminals, taking our jobs. Why do you think Trump centered anti-immigrant rhetoric in his campaign for president? And how does this fit with his America First crusade?
Sure. Yeah, I'll go first. I believe that he saw it as a way to power. Trump used the nativist playbook. He appealed to people's frustrations and really made immigrants the scapegoat. He was successful with that in his first term. So he just kept building that false narrative. This was never about illegal immigration, because if it was, the focus would be on the employers who are exploiting a vulnerable workforce, or it would be on a revamping of the different convoluted pathways to U.S. citizenship.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Jamie. I think that part of the reasoning here is that Trump himself is a capitalist, and he also represents the interests of capital. And since global capital benefits from a workforce that's divided, there is this dependency on exploiting the divisions that are born out of the social and cultural atomization that we're all experiencing. I think the more that they're able to keep us divided, and by they I mean Trump, Musk, the whole capitalist class, the less power that we have to challenge ruling class hegemony over the workplace, economy, and the state. And I think immigrant workers in particular can make a pretty vulnerable target. I think specifically domestic capital also benefits from a permanent underclass of workers. Undocumented immigrants have fewer rights, can easily be purged from the domestic labor force because of deportation. I think because of that, this relationship gives capital a big advantage in the class war.
So why do you think Trump and his henchmen, Tom Homan and Stephen Miller, are ramping up ICE, that is Immigration and Customs Enforcement, raids and kidnappings, promising to pick up 3,000 migrants per day? How much of these sometimes spectacular attacks have been for show? What is it? Both to excite Trump's base, terrorize immigrant communities, and provoke Trump's enemies? What do you think?
Something that comes to mind, and I think some other folks have mentioned this before, is this strategy to demoralize and overwhelm. We're seeing a lot of resistance that's being activated in the form of protests, but a lot of these can lack a political message that raises working class expectations. And meanwhile, a lot of segments of the working class still remain disengaged. I think of here in Salem, where we have a lot of demonstrations, but a lot of our Northeast corridor, which is where a lot of our immigrant workers are, those folks are still not being engaged. Those folks are still not politically activated. And so when we have that demoralization, a lot of that overwhelming I think it enables the Trump regime to execute his agenda without a lot of coordinated resistance.
I'll just follow that up with really the reason why they've been ramping up their daily quota is because it was part of Trump's campaign. He promised to carry out the largest mass detention and deportation program in our country's history. But it's that goal just isn't feasible when you're only targeting convicted criminals. And so the fastest and easiest way for ICE to achieve their quotas is really to target the general public. That's why they're kidnapping people outside immigration court hearings, racially profiling people, and raiding workplaces, because it's not about crime anymore. It's about carrying that largest mass deportation and violating everyone's civil rights to make it happen. But yes, those tactics are serving those purposes simultaneously. They're just able to create more propaganda for the Republican base and really just able to also work to provoke affected people, those of us that are being affected by these kidnappings, by these raids. That way they can just continue to escalate disproportionately in response to any resistance that we put up. We actually saw similar tactics play out back in 2020 with the Black Lives Matters protests. So, yes.
So, what has been the impact of these raids on immigrant families and their workplaces, schools, communities? Can you say a little bit more about what the impact has been?
Yeah, I can go first on that. Well, first and foremost, our neighbors are experiencing family separations. Workplaces are losing essential workers. The schools are experiencing more absenteeism. And I mean, on a bigger scale, I imagine we'll be, further impacted economically when particular industries are continuing to lose their workforce. We already saw a little bit of that now that Trump has been pressured to scale back with the field workers.
And then he reversed himself after 3 days. So, what does that mean? Why does he first gives an exception for agriculture, whatever, construction, meatpacking, and then he reverses himself after 3 days? What's that about?
I imagine that's to do with our attention span, how much pressure we're able to sustain on these efforts. And so once we see that initial pushback and he relaxes, rolls back a policy, and then now that we're not paying attention, continue right back up.
In a more local context, as in Salem, where raids are not actively taking place, the impact of this is still deeply felt. There's a lot of immigrant families and social networks that are on high alert. And unfortunately, this does prompt a lot of misinformation. I talk to a lot of family friends, family members, and they talk on social media about how there are a lot of false ICE sightings that take place, even amongst immigrant communities that get spread. And that gets really problematic because, in many ways, it might even be part of the strategy where you try to leave a lot of immigrant communities almost unsure of what's real, and in a way try to leave them confused and unprepared for real acts of raidings and kidnappings.
Well, mass deportations have been part of recent administrations. Obama being called the deporter in chief, as I recall. Trump's moves have provoked widespread uprisings, including nationwide protests against his family separation policies in 2018, and now the massive raids, especially the impact in Los Angeles, where huge crowds spontaneously interfered with ICE actions, fought police, were met with National Guard and Marines. So, what's the significance of the LA upheaval, and what are we learning from their resistance?
Something that was pretty remarkable, based on what I was able to observe, is that this was really a mass demonstration, a set of mass demonstrations where labor unions, community organizations, immigrant communities convened to resist against the police and the military. And in that vein, there does seem to be a lot of working class solidarity and appetite to protect immigrant workers. I think what this tells us is that there needs to be a lot of preparedness, a lot of readiness on the part of organized labor across the country to mobilize against raids, against kidnappings, against deportations, no matter where they occur. I think organized labor is a key part of this because it provides the potential for democratic mass participation, with accountability structures and leadership identifications, because one of the few nuances of all this is that there are pockets, there were pockets in the demonstrations where sometimes there were actions or behavior that even immigrant workers themselves, in conversations that I had with friends and family that I have down there, that they even harbor some negative sentiments about. And so when rank and file workers lead with militant action and demands that include very unitedly, the abolition of ICE, an end to forever wars, an end to the genocide in Gaza, and solidarity with all workers of the world. I think that's what will really help challenge and fight back against Trump, capital, and all forces of reaction.
There's some historical significance as well. So that was around June 11th, that weekend that it happened. And June 11th in 1963 was when John F. Kennedy called in the National Guard to Alabama to get black students into their college. And at that time, state troops were called in by the federal in order to protect constitutional rights. And we are now seeing the exact opposite of that, where that they're being called upon to, in violation of people's rights and as an erosion of the Constitution, and seeing that LA had prepared through setting up rapid response networks and really having these dialogues, these communications happening before June, in preparation of this administration's escalating tactics. They just it became they really showed us that we've actually it becomes our civic duty, when our legislative and our judicial branches continue to allow the executive abuse of power. It that there's that we have to take up our civic duty at this point.
So labor unions have recently stepped up their organizing against immigration and customs enforcement, provoked by high-profile ICE kidnappings of labor leaders like David Huerta, the president of the California SEIU, Service Employees International Union. Over 30 protests across the country were staged by SEIU a few days after Huerta's detention, involving the AFL-CIO and many other unions. What is the significance? You touched on it a little bit, Gio, but what is the significance and impact of these recent labor mobilizations against ICE?
SEIU really showed up. They and AFL-CIO already had the infrastructure in place for this sort of fast mobilization. Previously, in March of this year, they mobilized statewide, in Washington, to advocate for the release of two union members from the Tacoma Detention Center. And Llewellyn Dixon, she was eventually released, but Lelo Juarez still needs our support. So now that we're seeing what happens when these unions, when any unions, when we re actually mobilize on a national level, that we are seeing immediate results of really shining the spotlight on fellow union members. So we need to be talking about how our unions can be showing solidarity with each other in more direct ways to really start exercising that muscle of mass mobilization, because that's the core of the union, the power in numbers.
Yeah, and Huerta was released within a few days, as I recall, after those mobilizations. So historically, the threat of deportation has effectively kept migrant workers in a weak position, unable to de demand decent wages, benefits, working conditions, dragging down the conditions of all workers. While undocumented workers have the right to join unions, the threat of deportation and or actual workplace raids have effectively disrupted union drives. The SEIU has developed contract language that unions can negotiate to protect their immigrant members. Can you share some of that, or and tell our listeners where they can find it?
Yes. So, personally, I am not an SEIU member. I am a union electrician, but I've been to different union events where people from many different unions are meeting up. The most recent example was actually the Portland Troublemakers School that was in early May. And so I can't speak for all the locals, but I can say that SEIU 49, they have their contract bargaining agreements listed right on their website. They are accessible. They do currently have language requiring employers to notify the union when DHS or ICE are present at the workplace. If they have another section prohibiting employers from penalizing employees for immigration-related absences. They also ask that they reinstate employees who return with updated work authorizations. And those are just some examples of actually contract language protecting immigrant members. I will also just go ahead and plug Labor Notes. The website, they also have right on there some template contract language from SEIU that you're able to search on their website.
Great. So SEIU Local 49 website and Labor Notes website. So some unions, especially in construction, restaurant, food processing, agriculture, where there are high numbers of immigrants, have developed workplace plans to fend off or delay ICE while shielding, hiding, and organizing the escape of vulnerable workers. Nidia, I know you've been involved in developing such plans at construction sites. Can you talk about that?
Yes, so just to give a little context, the Labor Committee to Defend Immigrants that really had its origin last year, late last year after the election, we've actually had several unions pass resolutions to defend immigrants, including IATSE, including the Painters Union, as well as Carpenters and IBEW 48, they amongst some other ones that have been passing resolutions locally here to defend immigrants. And ultimately, the Labor Committee to Defend Immigrants was born out of these different trades unions collaborating together, opening up communication to to really share and brainstorm how to prepare for these scenarios at our different workplaces. So actually, we've been developing a training focusing specifically on worksite safety plans across different industries. We are hoping to hold an in-person training in late July, but we're working on the logistics of that still. I'll keep you posted on that. But really, the core of these safety plans, it's to ask people to look around the work sites and identify other trusted individuals that they can have a dialogue with about raid scenarios, that have them identify how they can communicate to the whole work site in these particular emergencies, what sort of communication modes are available to them, and really finally make sure to have everyone's emergency contact information updated or identify who's already in charge of that information. There's already existing structures, existing hierarchies within particular industries where it's a matter of talking it out and just really tailoring it more towards these specific scenarios. I just won't go into more detail on that, more as a matter of safety, more as a matter of it's so broad. Every workplace, every industry is such a unique setup that really the people that are working at, that everyone knows their workplaces.
And how, if folks want to get hold of in touch with the Labor Committee to Defend Immigrants, is that what it's called? Labor Committee to Defend Immigrants?
Monthly meetings, Sundays at noon, right at the Painters Hall. We will be having a change of at venue though. So upcoming meeting July 6th, Sunday at noon, that we're still finalizing which location that will be at, but I will update you on that. Absolutely.
So also your unions have, some unions have helped organize Know Your Rights trainings for their members and families. I know that some of the building trades have done that. I don't know if you specifically were involved, but not only for workplace, but on the street, at home, churches, hospitals, schools. Can you tell us what you know, what a Know Your Rights training is, what are the main lessons, how a union can get help to organize one?
Yeah, so actually that's a great way to plug in Portland's Deportation Defense Coalition. It's a coalition made up of different organizations, and one of those is the IMIRJ. They put on trainings for an accompaniment program. But so that's related to the Know Your Rights trainings. They do also several other organizations do put on their own Know Your Rights trainings, and they go ahead and do those announcements through the Deportation Defense Coalition. Then they just go ahead and disseminate that out to different social media platforms. But yes, the Know Your Rights training really just consists of reminding people that they have the right to remain silent. They have the right to not open the door to anyone on private property. It's really just these reminders about what our rights are when we're interacting with DHS, with ICE.
And there's something in particular to know about warrants, right?
Yes, exactly. So typically the more common one is the administrative warrant that ICE will usually carry around, but really the the difference is that an administrative warrant doesn't hold any authority. It's a judicial warrant where then you are legally obligated to comply. And so the Know Your Rights trainings go into how to identify, tell that difference between a judicial warrant and an administrative warrant, and how you can react to what your rights are with each specific one.
Great. And how do folks get a hold of the Portland Immigrant Rights Coalition or the no, excuse me, Deportation Defense Coalition?
Yes, so they have social media accounts, I would say with Facebook, Instagram. They also have email. They have a website as well, so they are accessible online.
A number of unions, as you mentioned, have passed these resolutions. My union, Letter Carriers, and some others have both declared themselves a sanctuary union, echoing the declarations of the state of Oregon, the city of Portland, Portland Public Schools. So, what is the importance of these resolutions?
Yeah, so the importance of sanctuary unions, it's really to, again, prioritize and show that we have that solidarity, that we are backing up our immigrant members, and that's the point, that we are actually having that dialogue, that we are looking at, whether it be contract language, whether it be Know Your Rights trainings. There are different ways of really putting it into action, but that's the purpose of declaring, making that declaration of being a sanctuary union. I do know it's differently with the state of Oregon, where they're explicitly. It's very explicit about not having law enforcement assist ICE, DHS for that. But with the unions, it's more a focus on supporting and our immigrant members.
What's been important to us, particularly as letter carriers, is that we're out on the street, most of the day. So we're eyes and ears all over the city. And we're encouraging our members to report any ICE activity that they see to the Portland Immigrant Rights Coalition hotline. The number is 888-622-1510. And they send out immediately send out verifiers, people to check and see if this is really ICE or Department of Homeland Security or Border Patrol, because these folks are showing up. I mean, the ICE folks are showing up without a uniform, without on unmarked vehicles, wearing masks. So it's kind of hard to tell who they are. But the verifiers then, alert legal observers and legal assistants and mobilize people that are willing to come out and protest. And sometimes folks don't even get arrested when that happens. So that's something that we're promoting both, throughout the labor movement, particularly among workers that are on the street. During the day and are moving around like letter carriers do. And we're trying to get the city of Portland in particular to adopt that with city workers. But we know there's an example in what just happened in Los Angeles with the Dodger Stadium where a city worker noticed ICE in the Dodger Stadium parking lot, notified the police who notified the Dodgers who kicked them off their parking lot. So that was pretty impressive. Sure, I just see that kind of thing happen here. So, Gio, you're involved with a campaign against Avalos Airline, an ICE contractor which deports migrants. Tell our listeners about that campaign, why it's important for unions, and who's involved, and how our listeners can connect.
Absolutely. So this Avelo Airlines pressure campaign was born out of our labor working group in the chapter. We conceived of the idea as sort of this intersection between the international workers' struggle and the immigrant worker struggle is critical to the plight of labor. And we noticed that anger had been building around the city's contract with Avail Airlines, which includes a host of rent waivers, fee waivers for operating out of the airport. It includes some grants, and our concrete demand to the city council has been for them to cancel the contracts. The mobilizations that we've conducted have included packing city council meetings and having folks testify during the public comment sessions. We have had folks from the local Stop Avelo chapter in Salem. We have had folks from Latinos Unidos Siempre, which is a local youth BIPOC advocacy organization, join us in some of those efforts. And using also our petition, which has been circulating across town and is now actually broached over 600 signatures, which is pretty remarkable. We've used that to place a lot of public pressure on city council, making sure that it doesn't stay contained within the halls of their meetings, but also like externally, publishing it across newspapers as well, placing pressure on social media. One of the big goals of the campaign is to make sure that we're centering working class language in this, by also connecting it to a lot of the plight that's going on in LA, for example. When that occupation happened by the Trump regime, we made sure to also escalate the demands to also include some kind of denouncement by the city council. And ultimately, because we're not seeing a lot of movement on the part of city council, we're also asking our membership to prepare to set the groundwork for a future city council run as well. So that's a
You're
big.
talking about Salem DSA, am I right?
Yeah.
Which is the Democratic Socialists of America, which
That's
helped
right.
elect four city councilors. You can
That's
do
right.
this in
That's right. So
Portland.
we're getting inspired by that work
Yeah.
to prepare our own run as well.
So overall, how would you both encourage our listeners to get involved in the struggle to stop ICE and Trump's deportation drive, either through their labor unions or in other ways?
Back in February, the AFL-CIO released a frontline solidarity toolkit for unions. It's a specific, more specifically, it's a mass deportation fight back toolkit for union activists and organizers. So anyone can request the PDF of that through their website. It's a really good resource.
Great. AFL-CIO website. Thank you. Gio, do you have something to add about
Totally.
how our listeners can get involved with the struggle?
Yeah, I mean, a couple of things. I would suggest, like, as for anybody, building a rank and file caucus in your union that will promote class struggle demands, like abolishing ICE and ending forever wars. I will always make the pitch for folks to join a Democratic mass member organization like DSA to build cross-sector working class movements. And engaging in mass politics by building coalitions with community organizers. One of the things that I forgot to mention is if folks want to get plugged into the work that we are doing by supporting like our petition or anything like that, feel free to get in touch with us, info@salemdsa.org, our email, or just visiting our website, salemdsa.org, to find our petition and help us by signing it.
Well, that wraps it up for this evening's show. You've been listening to Nydia Caballero, a union electrician, and Giovanni Tolentino of the Hillsborough Education Association. I'm Jamie Partridge. This is Labor Radio this Monday and every Monday at 6 p.m. Stay tuned for Prison Pipeline.